Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A-List with me, Jennifer Neely. Every week we chat with influencers around the globe to discuss the intersection of technology, media, social media, and entrepreneurship, and much, much more. This week we have a very special guest, Lauren Dugan from alltwitter.com, where she is an editor, and she's heading up Twitter Boot Camp this week at MediaBistro.com. Welcome, Lauren.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so glad that you are. So let's see. Today's July 11th already. I can't believe it. Your boot camp starts in only a couple of days. What are you thinking going into it? There's a lot of questions out there.
For sure. I'm really excited. This is kind of the first course of its kind that Media Bistro has put on. We talked a bit before creating the course. I get so many questions about Twitter every day, being the editor of alltwitter.com. And they range, from how do I use a hashtag to how can I tell, I'm getting conversions and things like this. So we really put together the course to address these questions and to kind of bring Twitter down to its basics to help people really get it. So I'm super excited for the course. I think it's going to be very useful and, really practical stuff for the students that participate.
Yeah, I think one of the things, so we should say that the social media marketing boot camp that we both participated in last time and that I'm participating mm-hmm. in this summer. Last time we talked a little bit about potentially having you on the show because it seems like there's two camps. There's people that are brand new to Twitter or have sort of beginner questions. And then there's people that have these great advanced questions that you could almost see them coming up with the new idea, the new hashtag, the new idea of how to use Twitter, and you want to service them too. How, when you put together the syllabus for the boot camp, how did you approach that, the two levels that are potentially participating?
You hit the nail on the head. Twitter is new to a lot of people. It's, it's kind of a buzzword and people don't quite understand what it means. But then there is this other group that, they've been on Twitter for a couple of years even, and they're very proficient, but even they have questions about new things, how do I really participate in a hashtag chat, things like this. So when I put the course together, I really thought about how to address both groups, keeping the content, at its core, very useful to anyone who wants to optimize their Twitter profile, their followers, how they tweet, regardless of how long they've been on Twitter. So, I think the material is pretty accessible for anyone who's totally new to the terminology. I explain, what a hashtag is if you need to know that. And I've also really expanded, especially in the last two lessons, on some pretty advanced topics. How to schedule tweets. We talk about the dashboards and different things like that. So, I think it will appeal to both kinds of Twitter users.
Yeah, I think that's a fabulous point because, what a hashtag is in the first place is something that obviously I get questions on also. And, mm-hmm. For the show, and that's why I try to make it as accessible as possible. But, certainly it'd be easier for me if I had one go-to way to do it. And what people may not know is that hashtags and things like that were, created by people that just were trying to figure out how to string conversations together, sort of like Twitter chats. Mm-hmm. And were strung together by the same thing.
Yeah, and I think that's one of, the most interesting aspects of Twitter. A lot of the tools and a lot of the, things like hashtags were created by the community. So, if you don't know what a hashtag is, you're not behind. If you learn, you're going to kind of, become part of the community. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity. And, people are kind of scared off by, you know, hashtag, at replies, at mentions, and what's an RT, what's an HT, all the lingo. But, you know, it might be a steep learning curve at first, but once you get it, you get it. And it's just, you know, like second nature.
So, you know, one of the things that I want to go back to is sort of your journey as well, because you are an expert, and I know you from the presentations that you've given, and you're clearly extremely smart. And I want to make sure people get a sense of you. And so I thought I would ask you when you started using Twitter and what brought you to it.
Sure. I started using Twitter. It must have been back in 2008. At an old account. I kind of had a pseudonym at the time. I didn't really understand it. I kind of, you know, I heard about it, I think in the media, or some of my friends were on it. So I just set up an account, kind of a random name with a bunch of numbers at the end. And, you know, in all honesty, I didn't get it. It's kind of the fable of new Twitter users. They sign up, they create, you know, their bio, they upload a picture, and then they're like, what do I do? How do I find useful information? Everyone says you can, but how do I do it? And how am I supposed to condense my thoughts down into 140 characters? That's just ridiculous. So I went through that kind of disbelief. Like, I was used to Facebook. I didn't really know Twitter in the beginning. So, you know, a lot of what I've learned since then has been trial and error. I just dove in, started following random people. You know, I have a couple musicians that I like, and I found them on Twitter, and I just kind of, you know, tried to emulate what other people were doing, which seemed to kind of work. And, you know, when I took on the position as the editor of All Twitter, I had some experience writing about Twitter prior to that. So I had kind of, you know, it was a slow transition. I started to kind of observe it more as this cohesive network from the outside as well as from the user's perspective. So, it gradually just coalesced, and, you know, now I'm just as addicted as the best of us.
I know, it's sort of like once you get it, you're stuck in there. You got to figure out how much time you're going to spend on it. Do you remember when it launched?
It launched as Twitter without, TWTTR, I think, and it was in 2006. Mm-hmm. I didn't really think too much about it, to be honest. It was just kind of like a blip on Mashable that I read at the time, and then it built up steam, obviously, and they changed the name a couple months later, and I think to be honest with Ashton Kutcher versus CNN when they did their 1 million Twitter follower competition there, that really propelled it into something that I knew was going to be long lasting and something that I really saw a lot of value in.
So what got you covering, because it doesn't sound like you were covering this kind of news at that time, because, you know, obviously South by Southwest was the big time that a lot of us remember it getting a huge boost. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, I love the way that you say, you know, remember its launch as sort of a blip until it reached that critical mass. You know, and you mm-hmm. started seeing, you know, the Twitter versus, I think Ashton Kutcher he got paid by CNN or something. I can't remember what the story was. But anyway.
They had some competition, I think. He challenged them to the first one to 1 million followers.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So what were you reporting at the time?
I started off really as a writer by trade. I have a background in English. So I was reporting on everything. You know, I kind of started a bit in politics, blogging for political blogs. Media Bistro's Social Times really propelled me into the tech and social media world as a writer. Previous to that, I was, a user and interested in it and just following the news kind of like everybody else. So with Social Times, I came on board as just a contributing writer, and I kind of fine-tuned my interests there. I'm really grateful because I had a lot of freedom in what I could choose to write about within the social media world. So, I've written about things like how Harvard uses their Facebook page and, just a whole bunch of different things. But I really latched onto Twitter as a tool that I saw as still being the underdog. One of, back when I started writing about it, it was still, one of the underdogs. But I saw it as a bit of, a Facebook competitor at first, and then as its own kind of entity. So I was really intrigued by that, and really just the power of 140 characters. As I said when I started, I couldn't believe that anything important could be said in 140 characters.
Let alone reporting. I mean, the idea of reporting short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the way journalists use it is just incredible. They're, one of the most creative groups out there for sourcing stories and promoting their own work and things like that. So, yeah, it clicked with me as a tool that, I saw a lot of potential in.
Fabulous. So When do you feel like... I guess one of the questions that I get a lot, and I'm sure that you do as well, is, things are changing all the time in social media. How do I know when to join? Or if I join Twitter now, how do I know it's not going to change hugely? So I thought, I'd ask you to reflect on that question just as someone who's covering Twitter and, in terms of the changes that have happened over time that maybe for us don't feel like so much that they've been changes, maybe it's just been exposure levels. So obviously as it's gotten bigger, it's changed use of it. So if you're coming to it now, so many more people are, it's at over 300 million users now. So, That's very different than the beginning when it was a much more personal or it could be a much more personal home feed, for example. So how do you feel like you stay on top of your A game? How do you keep your expertise in something that feels like it's kind of ever changing?
Yeah, that is a great question. And we all have, just 24 hours in the day to do everything that we want to do. So you do have to really address, how much time do I need to spend on Twitter to make it useful, but also just to keep up, and it's the same with other social networks as well. But with Twitter, I remember in the early days, I think I heard a story about a blogger because, back in the early days, it was just a lot of bloggers and a lot of, tech people who had really adopted Twitter. And I heard of a blogger, and I wish I could remember who, sold their Twitter background for some massive amount of money, or at least what I thought was a massive amount of money at the time, to a brand. So they basically branded their Twitter background with, I don't know what, say, some insurance agency's logo or something. It's really changed from that. That was kind of the Wild West of Twitter. That was just a user, being really creative with how to get what he wanted or she wanted out of Twitter. You can still do that. You can still experiment. But now I find with how many users there are and with Twitter, the company focusing a lot more on its own business model, it's really it's solidified. So there are kind of rules of the game that you can follow. You don't have to, but there's pretty clear guidelines out there that can really help you understand the basics quickly and then, you know, move on to making it work for you. So it's, you know, for the people who are unsure of whether to even get on Twitter now or unsure of whether it's working for them, now is a great time to really look into it as a tool for your business or your brand, because there are some pretty clear success stories that you can emulate, and, you know, there's people who have already kind of blazed the path that you can, you know, kind of model your own strategies after and you know, reconfigure them as you like. But there's a lot you can do now with some, you know, some pretty big degree of confidence. So I kind of, you know, I like that. I like that there's, it can be confusing, sure, but once you get it, there's a lot of things that you can do, you know, just to see the success you're looking for with Twitter.
So what are your favorite examples then? Because I always love to hear what people's favorite success stories are, favorite epic fails are, you know, and it's mostly because we learn from them.
Exactly. There are so many stories, so many great stories out there of really creative ways that businesses and people have used Twitter. I'm actually going to be giving a presentation later this week about responding to social media disasters and turning them into wins. So I have just like this, you know, massive library in my head of cool examples of fails, unfortunately, but fails that you can learn from.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you heard about the American Red Cross tweet that was sent out couple months back. This one was good. I really liked it.
What not to do.
Exactly. It's a great example because it's an example of what not to do, but then it's an example of how to respond when you do something wrong. Because, I mean, we're not perfect. Nobody is perfect. And as much as you, you know, have this veneer of professionalism, something may happen. You might have a mistaken tweet or, you know, just tweet something you didn't mean to. So with this American Red Cross example, for those who didn't hear about it, they basically, their official Twitter account that has, you know, I think hundreds of thousands of followers, tweeted something along the lines of, we're going to go get some more of a particular brand of beer, and we're going to go get Slizzard tonight. Something that clearly the Red Cross, you know, they shouldn't have on their Twitter account. And the response was just fantastic. They tweeted, I actually have it right here, they tweeted in response, "We've deleted that rogue tweet, but rest assured, the Red Cross is sober and we've confiscated the keys." So, you know, they were able to laugh at themselves.
Being tongue-in-cheek really helps.
It does. You know, it just, you have to hope that your audience understands that even if you're a big organization like the American Red Cross, you're just a group of people, and people do make mistakes, and, you know, that happens. But this, you know, this tweet, the story behind it was, it was meant for one of the social media manager's personal accounts, but he or she accidentally sent it to the official Red Cross account. And, you know, a headache for them, but they did an amazing job. They also wrote a blog post explaining exactly what happened, and they actually ended up partnering with that brand of beer that was mentioned in the original tweet and raising some money for the Red Cross. So it's just, it's one of my favorite examples of, you know, how to recover gracefully and, you know, end up in the positives after you've had a really embarrassing social media mistake.
And I feel that's a great example. And I feel like the American Red Cross is a great one always, because they are, since Katrina, and they were kind of caught out being behind the times, and people were reaching out on Twitter and they didn't really know how to respond. They've mm-hmm. done a lot of really good work writing about what you should do. So when mm-hmm. they mess up, it's like, you know, we're taking your advice, so we need to be really careful. So it was very clever that they turned it into a fundraising opportunity in the end, and it was only one tweet, and, you know, they were able to make light of it in a funny way, and all of those
things. It's a great example of, you know, maybe a couple years ago they didn't really understand social media, but then I think when they, realized the importance that the people that they deal with place on social media, they quickly learned it, and learned it pretty well, I think. So, yeah, that's a great example. I have so many more I could share, too.
We'll get to more of those. I wanted to go down kind of a related path, because people always ask this question, and I do some pro bono work for nonprofits. You know, we all have our things that we spend our personal time doing that we love. And a lot of people ask the question, the difference between how an NGO or nonprofit would use Twitter or another tool versus how they could use it, you know, how it would be used in a traditional business setting, B2B or B2C. Do you have any thoughts about that? I tend to think that they're pretty similar, and actually you can kind of get away with more in some ways if you're a nonprofit or an NGO, but I'd love to hear your thoughts, or if you have any examples in that space of the way you answer questions.
That's a really good question. I have been just casually talking to a couple of different hospitals and their administrative staff about, social media and how a hospital should use it. And I think, you know, I would agree with you. In a lot of cases, it's really similar to how businesses use Twitter. The kind of ethos of Twitter is, you should be engaging your audience and starting conversations, joining conversations, and always providing something of value to your followers. So along those lines, you know, NGOs and businesses kind of have the same mandate on Twitter, and they can act in very similar ways. But I think, too, that, things like hospitals and NGOs, where they have that, you know, extra element of doing good, I think that you have a bit of a responsibility. I know that hospitals in particular, there's a lot of kind of legal things that they have to really be careful about. Obviously, you can't go tweeting.
HIPAA violation in North America. Well, in U.S., yes. HIPAA regulations.
Yes, exactly. You need to, you know, keep your patient's confidentiality private. You need to really watch yourself. So I think that NGOs in general can treat it in much the same way, but just understand that an NGO and a business's mandate outside of Twitter is slightly different. So, you know, take that as well when you start tweeting or continue tweeting.
So kind of along those lines, another sort of segue opportunity here is, I look at companies that, you know, that I do business with, and some over time have morphed into companies that either I don't recognize or they've gone so rogue that their public persona annoys me. And one example was Bob Parsons of GoDaddy. .com, where I own a bunch of domains, and he went on this big hunting trip and said some things, and I just thought, God, I wish it wasn't cost prohibitive, but it just would have been a big pain to move everything over to HostGator or someplace else. And I feel like in that way, companies forget that they sort of, you know, by going out there, that they, you know, they're putting across their sentiment and their personality, and if their personality isn't very likable, and it's funny because this last week during Social Media Marketing Bootcamp was Guy Kawasaki talking about engagement, and I was thinking, like, Bob Parsons is probably the opposite of what I would consider to be engaging, because, you know, it was like, it's fine, I probably knew you did that stuff from listening to his early podcast days, but I didn't need it in my face. Mm-hmm. And that really embarrassed me to do business with them. And in that way, I feel like companies need to think about that part. It's less a responsibility, but more about how do you develop a tone that isn't going to alienate your customer base. I wonder how you address that, or you're going to be addressing that in the boot camp.
Yeah, you know, it is so important to set the right tone. In the first section of our boot camp, I am going to be getting students to kind of come up with a Twitter mission statement. And, you know, this is good for anyone, you know, whether you're new or a veteran, just because understanding why you're there will really help you set your tone. And, of course, you know, that's only half of it. You have to understand your customers on the other hand as well. But if you can kind of answer these two questions, why are you on Twitter and why are your customers or your followers, your audience, why are they following you on Twitter? You can really help, if you actually give that thought, you can help to eliminate some of these jarring discrepancies in tone. You know, there have been a lot of floods and a lot of things that people have taken back after tweeting. You know, celebrities are notorious for this, and politicians too. So giving it some foresight, I think, is very important. Just giving it thought in advance of even restarting or starting your whole Twitter strategy will help you stay focused and help you maintain the tone that you want. You know, being personable, letting your followers know a bit about who you are is completely fine, even if you're running a big brand, as long as it kind of adheres to the social media guidelines outlined by that brand or business. It's usually okay to give some insight into who you are. Social media, you know, the first word is social. People are there to interact with other people, not robots or press releases. Mm. So, you know, adding some of your personality into your tweets is, in most cases, usually a pretty good idea. People will trust you more. People will, you know, follow you. But in the same breath, like you said, if your personality is the one that's a bit abrasive, maybe, or it goes against the mainstream, it's unfortunate, but you're going to have to rethink a little bit about how close you let people get to that part of you, because it can alienate. It absolutely can. So, you know, it's kind of walking a tightrope. You want to maintain an authoritative tone and a professional tone, but, you know, you also want to be a bit personable. So, yeah, it involves some thought, a lot of thought, and a lot of careful consideration of your goals on Twitter.
Yeah, one of the reasons I give that example is because actually there was more discussion on Twitter. I don't even think that originally what he did was even discussed on Twitter, which was this hunting trip and things that he said. But it was sort of a story that just morphed into a meme on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And so that became bigger than the actual, I don't want to say it became bigger than the actual incident, because for some of mm-hmm. us, you couldn't really get past that. But you do have to be careful, because then the story takes over, you know, with the crowd getting involved.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I'll quickly give another example of that. Kenneth Cole, the designer.
Oh, yes.
This was bad. He tweeted, he personally, you know, signed the tweet with KC. He tweeted, you know, millions are in uproar in Cairo with the hashtag Cairo. And he says, you know, rumor is they heard about our new spring collection now available online here at this link. And obviously at the time, you know, the protests and the revolution was happening in Egypt. And a lot of Egyptian hashtags like Cairo, Egypt, protests, these were trending on Twitter. And he and his brand decided it would be a good idea to latch on to this hashtag to get more views on this particular tweet. Immediately, Twitter jumped on this and just decimated him and his brand. It was a pretty fierce reaction to his insensitivity. And, you know, he had to retract the tweet and apologize on his Facebook page. And like you said, the story became bigger than what originally happened, because after that, somebody created a parody account, like Kenneth Cole PR, just like the BP parody account, and, you know, just started tweeting these really, really grossly insensitive tweets relating, you know, tragedies to go purchase our spring collection. So, yeah, you know, tone is very important, and understanding your audience and understanding, you know, that you're dealing with millions, potentially millions of people when you send out a tweet, even though you might be only followed by a few. You always run the risk, or, you know, it's not always a risk, but it's something that could happen, that, you know, you get retweeted and lots of people will see what you have to say. So, yeah, you got to keep it professional, for sure.
Absolutely. And just responsible, I think, you know, is one of the tenets. Does it seem ethic? Does it ring true ethically? You know, and if doesn't, regardless of who's telling you to do it, you probably shouldn't do it. You know, it's something
exactly.
That, you know, the examples that you talk about in the description for the Twitter boot camp, again, which we're previewing, which begins on Wednesday. So everybody should go sign up. We got a promo code JN25. Go get a discount. I don't know if, Lauren, if you have a bigger discount that you can offer, but it's a great example. And sort of you talk about it at the beginning of the description with Lady Gaga, Starbucks, and the New York Times, which each are really, they represent something so immense in each of their names. You know, Starbucks, you know, as much as I was horrified when I came back from the Peace Corps to spend at that time $4 for a coffee drink,
I know.
Now more like $5 or $6 for a coffee drink.
Yep.
You know, it's maintained this friendly, wonderful, open dialogue with people, largely due to the smart people that were in place. The New York Times is, you know, the stellar news company that stayed stellar and not compromised online. And Lady Gaga is one of the 35 musicians that make up the top 100 Twitter or followed on Twitter users out there, and each kind of represents something different. But I wonder if when we give those examples to people and go, look, Starbucks is doing it, the New York Times is doing it, Lady Gaga is doing it, if companies that consider themselves smaller feel almost like, well, that still doesn't apply to me, and how you deal with that.
Yeah, you know, I just want to point out, too, about those three examples before I get into the smaller businesses. Each of them represent something very different and different ways in using Twitter. You know, they're obviously, you know, one's a celebrity, one's a brand, and one's a news organization, but they use Twitter in very different ways. And I think they're great examples because of this and because it kind of shows the versatility of Twitter. So however you want to use it is how you can use it. You know, Lady Gaga promotes her her CDs and her concerts, also the causes she believes in on Twitter. Starbucks is really, you know, they offer a lot of deals and discounts, and they engage their community. They buy promoted tweets quite often to advertise on Twitter. And the New York Times is really basically using Twitter as an RSS feed. They basically just tweet out the new stories as they come up. So I think when small businesses look at this, you don't need to look at them as three already successful brands, you know, that in this unattainable upper echelon of Twitter users. You can really look at them as three unique ways of using this really versatile tool, Twitter. Businesses and brands and individuals, you know, you can use Twitter to just as a listening tool. You can listen to your customers on Twitter using keywords, which I go over in the course. I go over how to monitor keywords related to your brand and your niche. so that you can kind of hear what people are saying about you or what you're selling or what your business is. So you can use it as a listening tool. You can also use it, just to give out your press releases and news related to your business and your industry. But, you know, what Twitter is all about is connecting. So any, you know, whether you're an individual, a small business, or part of a medium business, if you're looking to connect to your audience in a meaningful way, Twitter is the place to be. You can have one-to-one conversations with the people that support you, with your customers, with your followers. And I think it's this kind of, it brings everything really down to the grassroots. It's really powerful. You know, I always kind of think of Don Draper from Mad Men when I think of Twitter, because he would pay millions to have access to his, to the people that he's marketing to.
My summer is lacking in Mad Men, so I'm glad so glad that you gave that reference.
And they
do a great job with their character tweets. I don't even know who's doing those, if that's part of the show or not, but I love that. And I'm wondering, actually, you know, that's a good question, because I was going to ask you, what are some of the favorite things that you've reported on at AllTwitter.com or that AllTwitter.com has covered, period? And you know, maybe digging down on those types of things, you know, who's actually writing this, if that's one of those things. So I'll hand it over to you to give some examples of your work on All Twitter and what you've really enjoyed covering.
Oh, sure. I write about Twitter all day. I have so many different kind of perspectives. Let me think of some cool examples. There's been a few historical reenactments on Twitter that I find fascinating. There's an account right now, I think I'll get it wrong, but they're reenacting the Civil War through letters that were written at the time, and they're tweeting excerpts of different letters from, you know, wives on a homestead to from generals and all of this, really, like, it's real historical data that they're sending out there, and it's cool. They're doing it in like the proper timeline. So, you know, on today they're tweeting letters that were written today, on June 11th, during the Civil War. So that's just, it's really a pretty unique way of using Twitter. That just goes to show you can really use it for anything you want. And I think, you know, I really like the stories of the small businesses connecting with people on Twitter too. They're simple stories, but I find a lot of the businesses I cover have a positive experience on Twitter. They grow their followers. They they find new customers, and they're really able to harness Twitter in a way that's meaningful to them. And so, you know, when I read the kind of meta stats about this percentage of growth in Twitter users over the past couple of months, it's really cool to see how many of those people are going onto Twitter to follow the businesses and brands and celebrities as well, and politicians and kind of the sports figures and the larger-than-life figures that they're interested in. So, I love writing about useful things about Twitter, all the kind of different, sometimes quirky, like there was a group who they were role-playing My Little Pony on Twitter. And there's something like 300 people participating in this massive, massive role-playing world that they've created with, you know, all the rules in place, and they tweet back and forth, and they're in Ponyville, and they love it. And I think it's so, you know, it's just, I love seeing the spectrum of, you know, it's great for marketers and businesses and all this, but then there's these really creative folks using it for a bunch of different and really cool ideas.
That is so cool. I know that there has been a big Civil War movement this year. It's been written around, it was written about again around July 4th because of it's the 50th anniversary. I think if I'm counting correctly, it seems like it would be like the 150th anniversary. But
yeah,
whatever it is, it's an anniversary year for the Civil War. But there's so many. There's the PAC. IVIL War 150, mm-hmm. There's Civil War Vision, Civil War Week, Civil War Time, or Civilian War Time. Smithsonian has its own. There's archaeologists. There's all kinds of people doing Civil War stuff. What's so funny is what that reminds me of. I have to give a short story.
Sure.
I worked at a local news station, and I was producing a 5 o'clock segment and needed to help with the 6 o'clock, and I remember our station manager was a big supporter of the Civil War reenactments in that town, and that was fine. And so he decided that we had a great idea for one of these Civil War reenactors who was really hardcore. I mean, he only spoke in that sort of dialect of the time. And,
wow.
and he actually took the microphone out of the weather guy's hand instead of just answering the questions, because he was completely ready. It sort of translated modern day language into Civil War era language. And so it's one of those things that comes back, you know. It's like over time we see that again and again. So I should think of like all the weird things that happened when I worked in TV news, especially in local TV news, because the weirdest stuff happens there. And figure out what is happening in corollary on Twitter, because almost everything has translated to Twitter in some way. And that's what I love, mm-hmm. is that these, you know, everybody still can kind of get their groove on if they find the right way to do it and they figure Twitter out. And that's why I love the idea of the boot camp, because it can empower you to really go for it with whatever it is that you love doing or that you do for a living. So that's my little side story. One of the things that you had said that I love is earlier you said something about measuring, and you know, certainly measurement analytics, knowing if you're successful or not is huge for me, because I'm a big data geek. So I'd love you to talk about a few of the things that you'll be doing. I know one is measuring your success. The other might be directing conversations, potentially using hashtags, and then optimizing your tweet schedule. So those are few areas that you'll be talking about. I'd love for you to talk about them more so people can hear maybe some of the things you'll be helping guide people through.
Yeah. These are kind of some of the more advanced stuff that I'll be dealing with in the last 2 weeks of the course. The monitoring and digging into the analytics part I do find really cool too, because, you know, not only is it just neat to see these numbers, it really, I find it helps people who are currently measuring their Twitter success in terms of the number of followers they have. It helps them to understand that that's really not what it's about. And you can have 100,000 followers, but if none of them are listening to you, if none of them are retweeting or clicking your links or engaging with you somehow, you might as well have zero. So I really think it's important for people to understand the different types of analytics related to Twitter outside of just counting up your followers. For instance, I'm going to be sharing a couple of resources for checking into your own Twitter stats. To do some kind of, you know, understanding of how you're currently using Twitter so you can adjust your strategy for the future. These are really cool tools because they'll basically spit out stats like, how often you tweet on Mondays, how often you tweet at 12 noon, how often you at reply, and how many times you're sending out links versus just text. So understanding how you're using Twitter right now, you can really see, I tweet every Monday and Wednesday a lot, but like I'm never tweeting Tuesdays and Thursdays for some reason. So you can, you know, balance it out, spread out your tweets a bit more and things like this.
Is there a tool that maybe people can look at right now to get a sense or a flavor for what you're talking about right now? And hopefully it'll sell them on coming over to, because I think you have some great tools. There are so many tools out there that are such a waste of time or can be a time suck. But I found that the tools that you did around time of day were just fascinating.
Yeah. The one about time of day is Timely. It's actually timely.is. And that one is very cool because it's so simple. They'll basically tell you when you're tweeting, if you enter your Twitter username, that's all. And then they will give you four times that you probably should be tweeting that you're not, because these are times that your audience is online and that your audience is active and listening to you. So this, you know, this is just an example of these types of tools that you do need to, like you said, you need to pick out the ones that are useful. There's a lot of ones that are just a bit fluffy. And just as a side note, the Twitter developer ecosystem is so diverse. There are a lot of developers creating a lot of wonderful tools, too. So, you know, playing with tools is I love it. I think it's really fun. This timely.is one of the simpler ones, but it's great to start with because it gives you, like, really tangible things you can apply to your Twitter account right away to get an increased engagement. So it's great to start with. I can, you know, give another one. It's tweetstats.com. This one will present all of the times that you tweet, all of the days of the week that you tweet, lots of different stats in really cool graphs and charts, nicely
love
colored.
Those.
And yeah, they're fun and insightful too. So these are fantastic tools to use to start analyzing how you're using Twitter. It's also important to analyze how your links are being clicked on, and you can use Bitly for that. It's the most popular, most common link shortener. And, you know, I'll go over in the course exactly how to get at all the stats that Bitly provides, but they're a fantastic service as well.
So somebody's asking for you to just repeat the last link. You said there's the timely.is and then the other one that you recommend?
It's tweetstats.com.
Great.
And that, yeah, that one is, again, you just enter your Twitter username and you wait while it computes and you have a bunch of fantastic stats at your fingertips.
Yeah, and it's great because it's so graphically oriented and it's, people love that. I know I do.
For sure. I do too. yeah.
And then
so,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to move on to tweet schedules because I know you asked about that too. But
oh, yeah, please do, because I think that's one of the things that is, you know, could simplify lives like crazy if people understood how to do, to create a tweet schedule or use a dashboard. And I know you'll be getting into dashboards to create them, whichever way works best for them.
Yeah.
And what
and
you
I
recommend.
Think, yeah, definitely. They really work best in conjunction. Like you said, dashboards are key. If you're not using a dashboard, you need to start using one. It's almost impossible to do everything you need to do just from Twitter.com and to really get the most out of it. You can do the basics, but not everything that you should be doing. So dashboard, it basically brings everything into one place. You can monitor different Twitter lists, in streams right beside your home feed, right beside your all of your at mentions, right beside the pending tweets that you have set to go from your tweet schedule. So dashboard is just absolutely key. And in the course, I'll be going over the most popular dashboards like Hootsuite, TweetDeck, and Seismic, and, you know, kind of explaining some of the differences, the similarities, and how to use them as effective not only Twitter tools but social media management tools in general, because they can all do Facebook and LinkedIn and other social media presences as well.
Fabulous. So everybody will get a good overview of what those popular tools are and what they do well and maybe what they lack, because that's what everybody's wondering is, well, what's the difference without having to try each of them out?
Exactly. Yeah, I'll be talking about the differences for sure.
So one thing that kind of coalesces with that, or again, another segue, is Twitter buying TweetDeck. Did you get to cover that yourself, or what did, in terms of reporting, what did you make of that?
That was a really interesting move. It just happened maybe a month and a half ago now.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a surprise to a lot of people. TweetDeck is one of the most popular Twitter dashboards out there. It was built by a kind of independent UK software firm, I believe.
Ian Dodsworth, who's been on the show, he was who I met at LaWeb. He's fantastic. His goal originally, and I would love, if we had time, I would play the audio clip, but we chatted way too long. He talked about his original goal was to build the best browsing experience, which, you know, a lot of people ask, well, why isn't there sort of an offline version, or, why doesn't it, why it has limitations maybe that others don't have. But his vision was to create a browsing experience, and it just so happened that Twitter took off, and that I'm sure it allowed him to exit, and I haven't had a chance to get back and circle back with him, but I think that's an interesting thing. But Ian Dodsworth and Richard Barley or Farley was his community manager in France and lived in Provence. So I got to meet at LaWeb. But yeah, that's who created TweetDeck.
Yeah, it is a really great product. It was one of the first out there, and it's still one of the best Twitter dashboards now. But you know, the whole acquisition. There was rumors a few months, I think about December, a few months before Twitter actually purchased it, that it was going to be purchased by Uber Media, Bill Gross's company. And this company owns some of the most popular Twitter, BlackBerry, and iPhone apps. And they have an Android app. They're kind of covering their bases and owning the Twitter third-party application kind of area. So there were rumors amongst investors that they were looking to buy TweetDeck, and a lot of people kind of saw Twitter's acquisition as a bit of a defensive move, just to stop these guys from buying TweetDeck. And others saw it as, Twitter has a Mac client, but they don't have a desktop client, or they hadn't until TweetDeck, for PC. So, some other people kind of saw this as expanding their offerings and covering all of their bases. So Twitter now has a client that it owns on every platform, web and Mac, PC, and all of the smartphones. So, either way, They bought it up in May, and I think it went for about $40 million.
Yep.
And it'll be interesting to see what they do with it. They haven't changed it or done much, and they're keeping the team intact. So, time will tell if they add some cool new features that only Twitter can add, or what happens there.
So another thing I thought I would ask you about while I've got you on the hook here is something that I've been thinking about, and Christy Wells from Social Media Club actually brought this up in terms of Google Plus. I don't know, are you playing on Google Plus? I assume you are.
And yeah.
And if you have any thoughts on, she was articulating with the different streams and the way that they work, and just kind of watching it, it's going to be interesting to see what the impact could potentially be to Twitter, and could Twitter maybe, hopefully not, I don't see this happening, but, could it go away because of Google Plus, and maybe why that is from your perspective?
Yeah, Google Plus it's really exciting. I just started kind of playing with it last week. I haven't gone super in depth yet, but I've read a lot about it, and I think a pretty big argument for Google Plus, if not, you know, eliminating Twitter, but at least you know, taking a bite out of it, is the fact that right now Google Plus has seemed to kind of launch for the tech geeks, we'll call them, like us, right? For, you know, the media people and the bloggers and the people in tech. It seems to be, you know, that's how Google kind of does things. They do it through invite, and the people who are sharing invites are all of us in tech. And that's how Twitter started as well. And so that's kind of, you know, they have a similar base. Now, Twitter obviously has expanded. There's a lot of celebrities and just, you know, regular people on Twitter. And so, you know, there, that maybe isn't a one-to-one comparison, but just in looking at how it started, they do have that similarity.
And so does Facebook, to be fair. Facebook does, too, to be fair. I remember when I was at Columbia and they opened up Facebook to the Ivies. And so we were, you know, everybody was so excited and buzzing about it. So that was, it's a pretty similar phenomenon with the more recent, you know, companies that we all are using for social interaction.
Yeah, for sure. Facebook had that kind of slow rollout too. They, you know, targeted like teens and university age kids though, not necessarily like bloggers.
Oh yeah,
per se.
Definitely, it was definitely a different audience. Totally.
Yeah. And then, you know, another thing I just quickly see Google Plus maybe kind of competing with Twitter in is the business side of things. I just read this today that Google is going to be launching a business version of Google Plus for brands.
Yeah, an enterprise version. They were telling brands last week, do not create accounts yet, please don't create accounts yet, which is, of course, too late for some. And what I've been telling those, like in the boot camp, I had offered to give people, you know, invitations that wanted them, and they keep taking them away. So it's not, I'm not able to. And I feel bad because there's others in the tech community. They're going on Facebook saying, I don't have time. How are you finding time to juggle it? And it's like, give that invite to someone that really wants to spend time looking at it then, if you don't have time for it. You know, I just think that's a terrible it gives a terrible impression to people. But anyway, that's my personal soapbox. But but I think one of the things that people have really honed in on, which people may not realize about Seismic, is that Seismic was originally supposed to be video chat. Really, it was like the video version of Twitter. I remember walking around San Francisco and going to this morning meeting. A Jeff Pulver was in town, kind of breakfast that we were that. A bunch of us were attending, and Seismic was a video play completely, and then it really did veer off and change course, and now it's become what we know today. But anyone that knows the founder, Loïc Lemure, knows he loves video, and Le Web, which is his conference with his wife Geraldine, they always do the theme. They always announce the theme by video. You know, they do this embedded video thing. And so now in Google Plus, people, you know, are saying, oh, I just love the video stream so much. So I think that's interesting. And I wonder if Seismic has something in their back pocket that will help them propel with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually hadn't put that together, but that is a great point. They might, you know, if they're the first dashboard to add Google Plus support, that's huge. And or even, you know, do something crazier than that. So I think that's something to watch for sure.
So as we get into our final minutes, now we want to remind everybody, Wednesday this week, Lauren's Twitter boot camp starts. You can sign up at mediabistro.com. Is there a short URL, Lauren?
I'm not really. I had one. I don't have it actually in front of me right now. You can go you know, you can just go to the Media Bistro page to their online courses.
Yeah,
and it's right there in the list.
Yep, mediabistro.com/courses. The promo code that I have is JN25, which will give you a little bit of love getting into the whole process of the conference. It's a great purchase for the time that you get. It's 4 weeks long, so you're going to have a lot of time to interact with Lauren and her expertise.
Yeah, you know, I'm really hoping that anyone signing up comes away with a lot of new practical knowledge that they can apply, like, as the course. You know, every week you'll have some new kind of homework tasks that will definitely help you strengthen your tutor strategy. And at the end, I really expect the students to come away with a much more powerful Twitter presence.
I can't wait to see who emerges bigger than ever after it, because there's great success stories out of all of the boot camps that Media Bistro does, and I think you're a fabulous person to be leading one, and I'm so glad that you spent the time with us today. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It was a lot of fun, and I hope your listeners enjoyed it, for sure.
I'm sure that they did. We've had good feedback so far. Again, this
Great.
Is Lauren Dugan, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me, Jennifer.
All right. And I thank you, the listener, for tuning into the A-List with me, Jennifer Neely. We hope you enjoyed the program. Please feel free to embed, download, or otherwise share the show. We also would love it if you would tell us how we're doing. Follow us or send us a comment on Blog Talk Radio, add us to your favorites, or subscribe and rate us on iTunes. We depend on that feedback to know how we're doing. Shows can be made available, full or an excerpt, to public radio show hosts through prx.org. So please just submit a request if you'd like to use any of the audio that you've heard here. And the links to everything that we talked about today and more is at JenniferNeely, N-E-E-L-E-Y.com. And I wish you a wonderful week.